Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Anyone who's ever had to find a new doctor here in Massachusetts knows that the search can be slow and difficult. More than half of primary care physicians are no longer taking new patients. And if you're lucky enough to get an appointment, the average wait can be as long as 7 weeks.
But what about people in the midst of a mental health emergency, those facing severe depression or even contemplating suicide? What happens when they seek psychiatric services? Well, a new study due out today paints a troubling picture.
In the study, researchers from the Cambridge Health Alliance and Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center called 64 mental health facilities within 10 miles of downtown Boston. The callers pretended to be patients with Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance and said a local emergency room diagnosed them with depression and told them to seek care within 2 weeks.
And here's what happened. After 64 calls, 64 attempts to get mental health services, only 4 of the facilities granted an appointment within 2 weeks. In 15 cases, researchers left phone messages but never heard back.
Access to mental health care, that's today's talker. Why is it so difficult to obtain mental health care in Massachusetts? And what, if anything, can be done about it?
And joining us now is one of the co-authors of the reports. He's Dr. Wesley Boyd, a psychiatrist with the Cambridge Health Alliance and a faculty member in psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. And Wes Boyd, good to have you. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And we want to invite our listeners to join this conversation. What's your story about seeking mental health services in Massachusetts, either for yourself or for a family member? Does your insurance adequately cover this kind of care? Give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Wes Boyd, so the headline here, mental health care hard to obtain. And before we go into some of the details of the study, which is fascinating, what struck you the most about it?
Well, originally we set out to compare access or the availability of psychiatric appointments based on whether you had what we considered a good private insurance, like the one we use, Blue Cross Blue Shield. We were going to compare that to access to outpatient appointments if you had MassHealth, which is our state's Medicaid program.
Right.
The first part of the study, though, was to make the phone calls to facilities with the Blue Cross script that you've already read. And we were so astounded at how few appointments we were able to make with the Blue Cross script that we didn't even bother to come back and do the whole thing with the MassHealth or the Medicaid script.
I see. So let's talk a little about some of the detail. As we mentioned, your researchers posed as patients who'd just been diagnosed with depression by an emergency room, right?
Correct.
And so, and they're told that they need to see a psychiatrist within 2 weeks. They call 64 different mental health facilities. Only 4 of them get an appointment within 2 weeks. What else did you find?
Well, we were able to obtain another 4 appointments, but they weren't within the 2 weeks that the emergency room theoretically or hypothetically said we should obtain the appointments in. And as you said also, 15 out of 64, 23% of the time, we did not get a return phone call despite leaving 2 different messages at the healthcare facility over a period of several days. And another 23% of the time, we were told that we could not obtain a psychiatric appointment in a given facility unless we also had a primary care doctor within that facility.
Within that facility. So that's sort of an internal administrative barrier, essentially.
Yeah, and from my experience, this is not a by-chance barrier. It's because psychiatric services, when they're offered by institutions, are often money losers. And so, of course, you have to offer psychiatric care to be a full-scale hospital, and yet if you can limit the availability of access to that care, you're going to lose less money in the process.
And, Wes, let's talk a little bit about the consequences here that you talk about. In your study, you say inadequate mental health services have widespread social effects. What are they? How serious are they?
Well, for one thing, our emergency wards have emergency departments have de facto become psychiatric wards. Mm-hmm. In one of my previous jobs, I worked a lot with doctors of different sorts, including emergency room doctors, and I used to hear from them constantly how often it was the case that they could not place psychiatric patients into psychiatric facilities who they deemed in need of inpatient psychiatric care. And so often emergency physicians will end up boarding psychiatric patients who need to be hospitalized because they can't even get access to an inpatient bed. Granted, it's slightly different than our study, sure. But it's the same point. Also, 79% of emergency room physicians surveyed around the country, this is not just a Massachusetts problem, 79% of emergency physicians around the country said that they at times boarded psychiatric patients in their emergency rooms because they couldn't obtain necessary care.
You mentioned the statistics about emergency rooms around the country, and I'm curious to know to what extent these results are in line with national data about the availability of mental health services.
We think that our preliminary findings, granted it's a small study in a single location, but we do think that this is more or less in line with national data. Given that across the country, I think it's two-thirds of internal medicine doctors can't obtain needed psychiatric appointments for their patients, you know, once they've deemed them necessary.
Hmm. Well, listeners, we're talking about the challenge of obtaining mental health care in Massachusetts and what, if anything, can be done about it. We'd like to hear from you about your experiences. Have you had a hard time finding mental health care services, either for yourself or for a loved one in your family? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And let me welcome Lori Martinelli into this conversation. She's the executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Massachusetts. And Lori, good to have you on the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So you've been listening to this conversation. What strikes you? Surprised by what you hear in any way?
Unfortunately, I'm not surprised because this is something that people, advocates in the mental health community in Massachusetts have been dealing with for years. And also, we're a member of a national organization, NAMI National, and I'm just looking at their study entitled State Mental Health Cuts Are a National Crisis, a state-by-state data study, which was released by NAMI National in March of this year, and it shows just what Dr. Boyd has been talking about, a real decline in services, budgets being slashed, and inadequate number of providers, both inpatient and outpatient.
Hmm. Well, it's a problem that certainly has been talked about for a while. I want to focus on a little bit of the criticism that's emerged about this study. We reached out to Blue Cross Blue Shield today and asked them to join us. They declined, but earlier WBUR did talk to Jay McQuaid, and he's a spokesman for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts. And he raised a couple of concerns, Wes. And here's the first one. Let's just listen and then get you to respond.
I mean, I think our sense about the study is that it was done for the sole purpose of using it as an attempt to publicly pressure the state's health plans, like Blue Cross, to pay these clinicians more money, which is disappointing to us anyway, especially at a time when everyone in our community is so focused on our shared goal of making quality health care more affordable for the individuals and families and employers who are in Massachusetts.
So, Wes, the study, an attempt to get more money for clinicians, pure and simple?
Anything but, unfortunately. Three of the five of us aren't even psychiatrists, for what that's worth. And second, and also, I think that sort of criticism misses the point. It's either trying to deliberately have us look elsewhere and away from the fact that, in general, and I think the NAMI would agree with this, actually, in general, mental health care is undervalued and not just by insurance companies, but on a social and political level, mental health care is undervalued. And so as a result, you have these widespread shortages that we just heard about. And this was not in any way a meant to be a dig at the insurance industry in the least. In fact, we picked Blue Cross partly because it's the largest insurer in the state, and we even used the PPO brand because it doesn't require prior authorizations and it's fairly unrestrictive.
Hmm. But isn't one of the issues, though, and you do argue in the study that psychiatry needs to be more generously reimbursed? Isn't that one of the issues at play here?
Yeah, and so that small little portion of things, yes, that is a fair criticism. Because psychiatry is generally not paid or reimbursed at rates that make it profitable for institutions to offer services, that's the reason that there's often an implicit form of rationing within institutions of the psychiatric services that they might have available. I'll just say by contrast, for example, whereas, you know, as we see, you're supposed to have a primary care doctor within the system or something like that in order to access psychiatric care, you know, if these were high-tech imaging procedures or, you know, titanium hip replacements or cataract surgery, you know, all of which are reimbursed quite well, there are never restrictions on accessing those kinds of services.
Laura Martinelli, I mean, for some time, sadly, mental health care has been regarded as sort of the neglected stepchild of the country's health care system. How do we turn that around?
Well,
that really seems like what this study points to, a need to turn that perception around.
Right, and I think you're right, and I agree with what the doctor said. It is about reimbursement rates, and you know, I'm sorry that Blue Cross was offended, but that's where the rubber hits the road, unfortunately. And inpatient and outpatient care are not valued by insurers and hospitals and society at large. I agree with you. So when a hospital or when a clinic has to eliminate services, they do look at the bottom line. I mean, that's the environment that we live in. But the low payments for psychiatrists and psychologists and other professionals in the mental health field is not anything new. That's been going on for a long, long time. And I just want to add that I was actually glad that it was a commercial insurer, because we always hear people on MassHealth, the reimbursement rates are too low, and it's nice to hear, well, you know what? The largest insurer in the state also has too low of reimbursement rates.
Well, I want to get to some calls very shortly, but I want to hear one more quote here from Jay McQuaid of Blue Cross Blue Shield, just because we did want to give Blue Cross a chance to sort of chime in here, and I think it also provokes an interesting discussion. Here's another issue that he raised with the study. Let's just listen.
The authors unfortunately focused only on facility-based psychiatric care, and they ignored the hundreds of individual psychiatrists that are within a 10-mile radius of Boston and who can and do offer quality care for our members. I mean, I think it's important to point out that Blue Cross alone has a large network of behavioral health clinicians, totaling almost 10,000 providers.
So, Wes, what do you think? I mean, well, first, just basic question. You focused on, you didn't focus on these individuals. You focused on facility-based psychiatric care. There was a reason for that. What was it?
The reason that we did that was we did think about surveying individual practitioners. But again, our original study design was going to be comparing access if you have a high-end private insurance like Blue Cross compared to MassHealth, which is our state's Medicaid program. And right off the bat, I said we can't therefore call individual practitioners because virtually none of them are going to be taking MassHealth patients within their private practice. And that's the reason we had to focus on facilities. It may be that a somewhat higher percentage of private practitioners who accept Blue Cross might have had availability within their practices, but in my experience, many, many private practices are completely full, irrespective of whether they take insurance or not. And many, many private practitioners in this state simply don't take insurance at all because the reimbursement rates are a lot less than they can get if they say, you need to pay me out of pocket.
I have to say, I had personal experience with this recently. I was helping a family member look for a mental health care professional, Blue Cross Blue Shield. It was very difficult to find. I mean, the first obstacle, actually, I haven't sort of surmounted this obstacle yet. The first obstacle I had is many people that I called that were recommended simply didn't take Blue Cross Blue Shield or the particular Blue Cross Blue Shield plan that I have. Why is that? I mean, why do many psychiatrists not want to deal with these health insurance plans?
Well, many of them are onerous, first of all, in terms of their requirements for, you know, getting authorization to see someone more than a certain number of times. Many of them also, again, simply pay far, far less than people can get if they restrict their practices to people who can pay out of pocket.
Sure.
As is the case in my private practice, I'm simply full. And I can't tell you how many calls I get from people over the course of a week where I say, I'm really sorry, I can't take you because I'm full.
There's just not enough hours in the week.
There are not enough hours in the week. And the common refrain is, I have, you know, gone down the list and you're the 15th person I've called and I keep hearing the same thing. Mm.
Well, let's take some calls. Listeners, we're talking to Dr. Wesley Boyd. He's a co-author of a study talking about the difficult accessibility, how difficult it is to access mental health care services. We also have Lori Martinelli, Executive Director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Massachusetts. Let's go to Michelle, who's calling from Littleton. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. I actually have comments on both sides, good and bad things happening with looking for mental health. Really quickly, when I needed to find somebody, and I have Blue Cross, it was pretty easy to find both a counselor and a psychiatrist. When it came time for my six-year-old, when he started exhibiting kind of major issues, I searched for about a year with 40 psychiatrists. No one would call me back or they were full. I had a few people willing to see us once, tell us they would work at a treatment plan and never respond again. And finally I had to pay out of pocket because the only way to find somebody was by paying a large quantity of money.
Out of pocket.
Out of pocket. Yes.
Well, Lori Martinelli, let me come to you with that. Michelle's talking about psychiatric services for a young child. Is that even more in demand and more difficult to access in this state?
Yes, it absolutely is. And I'm sorry you had that experience, Michelle, but it is true that for child psychiatrists, there's not only a shortage of them in Massachusetts, but there's a national shortage of them. So there's not enough in other states as well, but certainly in Massachusetts we have a shortage of psychiatrists. Some primary care doctors will set up a telephone conversation with the child psychiatrist to try to at least connect them with the doctor who's seeing the child, but certainly that's not as good as seeing the person face-to-face. But I'm sorry you had that problem, but it also sounds like you didn't really get good care either.
Well, Michelle, thanks for that call, and I'm sorry as well that you had that problem. Wes, you wanted to chime in on this?
Yeah, I wanted to chime in about the case of the child and how difficult it is to get child psychiatry services. As I said, when I talked to some of my emergency room physician friends, they uniformly will tell me of boarding, you know, keeping psychiatric patients in their facilities while they're waiting to place them. When I told one of my patients, who happens to be an ER nurse, 2 or 3 days ago about the study that was coming out, she intuitively understood it, you know, no question, and she said the very thing that we just heard: it is even worse if you have a child who is in need of psychiatric care. She told me in one case in her emergency room, they kept I think he was 12 years old, but a young adolescent, 3.5 days in the emergency room while he was waiting to be placed in an inpatient child psychiatry unit.
Hmm. Let's take another call. Karen is calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I particularly want to comment because Blue Cross Blue Shield was involved in this. I have a Blue Cross Blue Shield HMO product, and it was impossible for me to find psychiatric care using my health insurance. My husband, I'm also on his policy, and he has a PPO, Blue Cross Blue Shield product. But because my insurance is my primary insurance, the process of me being reimbursed through my husband's insurance requires so much effort that I still haven't seen any money from Blue Cross Blue Shield. They owe me nearly $10,000. Hmm. My husband and I are both have multiple graduate degrees. My husband actually is a disability lawyer. I'm a physician. And the paperwork is so challenging, and the process is so challenging that we're having trouble negotiating it.
Boy,
so
Karen, I mean that. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's difficult for us.
Yeah, and someone like you and your husband should be in a pretty advantageous position in navigating the system, I would think.
So I can't imagine what it would be. And we have the resources to continue to lay out the money so that I can continue to receive care.
Right. Well, Karen, we wish you all the best, and I'm very, very grateful for the call. Lori Martinelli, I mean, there's Karen talking about multiple graduate degrees, a physician, a husband who's in a similar situation. I mean, this really speaks to a system that sounds broken to me.
Yeah, I agree that the advocates, and including NAMI, for the last several years, and particularly this year with all the budget cuts, we've been clamoring that the system is fragmented and broken. And I think it gets to something that Dr. Boyd said, which is some individual therapists don't even bother to take insurance because it's too much of a rigmarole, too much bureaucracy for them to go through. So it's definitely a problem, and I think Karen has gone through it, unfortunately, and was able to give her own personal story.
Sure. Let's go to Karen, who's calling from Downtown Crossing. Hi, Karen.
Hi, I'm currently in therapy with. Hello, yes.
Yep, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm currently in therapy, but for the last 9 years, and the last before I entered therapy, it took me a year and a half to be on a waiting list to be called back. I had doctors' recommendations. And I was on many other waiting lists. I called doctor's offices left and right, and no one was able to see me until there was a position open, a spot open in the office.
Sure.
I checked every offices like pretty much once a month in all around Boston. I'm currently being cared for in Wellesley.
So it took a while, Karen, but you got there eventually, it sounds
yes.
like.
But yeah. I have a private health insurance, so it wasn't a big deal as long as, you know, somebody can see me.
Sure.
It wasn't the insurance that I had issues with. It was actually seeing a doctor.
Let's Karen, thanks for the call, and we appreciate it, and we wish you all the best. Let's try to get at least one more call in. Barbara is calling from Andover. Hi, Barbara. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. I just want to say, ironically, I was supposed to have an appointment this afternoon as we speak at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center with a senior psychiatrist who has been my physician for 12 years or more. And yesterday I got a phone call from the insurance department harassing me over my Medicare coverage. Do I have black lung disease and all kinds of silly questions? And, I tried to cancel the appointment. It's just ridiculous.
Right. Well, Barbara, we're really sorry to hear that. Wes Boyd, let me ask you. I mean, there's an example of someone trying to get psychiatric service with Medicare coverage. I mean, is that also an issue that is widespread in your view?
Well, Medicare does not require prior authorizations, at least most other products, the ones I'm familiar with. They don't require prior authorizations. However, the reimbursement rates that the private insurers use are, I believe, hinged to Medicare rates. And so although Medicare is, you know, widely accepted at institutions, it's sort of iffy within private practices. It still, the reimbursement issue still comes up as problematic.
Lori Martinelli, let me ask you about what, if anything, might be happening at the state level. The state legislature, as we know, is considering a shift away from the way hospitals and doctors are paid. And instead of receiving a payment for each service rendered, providers would basically pay a lump sum to cover all of the patient's care. Does that kind of reform, that kind of talk, would that help this situation at all? And if not, what would?
Yeah, I wish I could say. I mean, this is the global payments, and of course,
sure.
It hasn't gone into effect yet, so we don't really know. We don't see that there's going to be a big change in the payments and the treatment of mental health. It's always been the poor stepchild, but we're hopeful. But I think it's still too early to tell whether global payments and the shifting that's happening in the medical and healthcare system is going to help behavioral health issues.
Sure. And West Boy, do you see anything out there on the state legislative level that might actually address some of the problems that we've been talking about?
I don't exactly. And yet I did, as a result of the article being published today, get an email from someone in the state Senate asking for a copy of the piece. And they're hopeful that this can be part of the solution. In other words, give them information that they can use to help effect change for the better.
And let me ask you this finally. Your study was published as a letter in the Annals of Emergency Medicine. I understand the journal declined to publish it as a study on the grounds that it looked at such a small sample, right?
That's correct.
So do you plan to expand this study, and do you think that would add to its validity and add to the case that needs to be made here?
Well, we felt like prior to the research, we figured it wouldn't be pretty, and we also figured it would more or less echo what is going on nationally. But we might use this preliminary study as a basis for a larger study coming out.
Well, let's end this segment with a note on Facebook. Allie writes, I'm advocating on behalf of my child, and I have a long list of clinicians who couldn't even extend the courtesy of a return call. When I called Blue Cross's customer service, they told me there is nothing they can do. So that sums up a problem that seems to be shared by a lot of people. Dr. Wesley Boyd, psychiatrist with the Cambridge Health Alliance and a faculty member in psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
I really appreciate the time and your attention to our piece.
And Lori Martinelli, executive director of the National Alliance on Mental Illness of Massachusetts, thank you so much for your time today. We're very grateful.
And thank you for shedding light on this issue.
Well, it's something we'll continue to shed light on in the weeks and months ahead. Thank you.